We do have a quorum. Not a big one, but we do have a quorum. So I think we're going to go ahead and start this meeting. The clerk would call the roll, please.
Ammons. Anderson.
Here.
Beckett.
Here.
Benzel.
Here.
Beck.
Here.
Carter. Cowart. Dennis.
Here.
Gladney.
Present.
James.
Here.
Jay.
Here.
Jones.
Here.
Knott. Kurtz.
Here.
Langenheim. McGinty.
Here.
Michael. Mosier. Nudo.
Here.
O'Connor.
Here.
Richards. Rosales. Sapp.
Here.
Schrader.
Here.
Smucker. Weibel. Wysocki.
Here. We do have a quorum. I need a motion to approve the County Board resolution to meet as a committee of the whole.
So moved. Second.
Motion by Mr. Betts, seconded by Mr. Beckett. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I need a motion to approve the minutes of June 8th, 2010.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. James, seconded by Mr. Jay. Any corrections, changes, additions? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I need a motion to approve the agenda for this evening.
Oh.
Motion by Mr. Kurtz, seconded by Ms. Anderson. Mr. Beckett.
I want to, under facilities, we have a closed session request, item C. I'd like to do that at the end of the meeting.
Okay. Any other changes? Mr. Betts.
A question for the chair, since I know a lot of folks here are about that issue with regard to the zoning change. Could that be moved forward so that they can sit through?
We can do that if the board is willing to make the change.
Yes.
Okay. I hope, too, that Mr. Weibel and Mr. Rosales have joined us as his cohorts here. All those in favor of the agenda as amended signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Public participation. We have a number of people who have submitted requests to speak. Most of these seem to be on one issue. If there's anyone else who does want to talk, you need to fill out one of these slips and bring it forward. I would say that I am definitely imposing the five-minute speaking rule. And the other part of that rule has to do with public participation lasting for 1 hour. So in order to extend public participation beyond an hour, the committee would have to agree to suspend this rule. But we'll see if we can get through this. I would certainly encourage people that if you hear your sentiments or your information spoken by somebody earlier, you might consider not saying the same thing over and over again. But if you insist on doing that, fine. I'm going to start with the one item that is not on this subject. Heather Sauter.
Hi, my name is Heather Sauter, and I live in the town of Broadlands. And I'm just coming to the board tonight to just express some concerns I have about this proposed coal mine coming into the town that I live, work, and play in. And so I guess I'm a little disappointed in the way Sunrise Coal has handled some the public relations. I honestly don't have any information from them about what they plan to do in my town, around my town, what they plan to do with the waste products from their coal, how this will affect my well water, how it will affect my home, and how it will affect the streams that my children and I play in. And there's been some informational meetings in our town, and from what I can gather, Sunrise Coal has kind of been flying under the radar, and in my opinion, being a little bit dishonest with the way they're going about getting the coal mine to come into this area. I would like them to be a little bit more upfront. I want them to answer questions. There's been requests by the News Gazette for them to answer questions about the effects on the environment and on the farmland, and no one's really speaking up. I took it upon myself to contact Sunrise Coal, and I really wanted to hear their side of the story, because I wasn't swayed one way or the other, kind of, but I talked with a lady named Tara, and you know, I said, you know, what can you tell me about slurry ponds, or you know, do those run off into the stream water? And she said, you know, I don't know. I asked about the large mounds of waste product that come from under the earth. There's a large one near Murdoch, which is really unattractive. And I said, you know, can that land be tilled? Can I build a home on it? What can I do? And she said, you know, I don't know. And so before any zoning changes were to happen, I would hope the board could consider and investigate for the community the impact that the coal mine is going to have on these areas. It's just a very important topic. So I'd like some more information. Thank you for hearing me tonight.
Thank you. Carl Weber.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. As you know, we are here to discuss a residential recovery center. A number of people are here, and we have asked those who are in favor of it to follow the suggestion from the chair about trying to not take too terribly much time, and perhaps just indicate if they are in favor of the project or the concept. I would say that there are also, as you can tell from the number of people here, quite a few people who also have not suggested that they would speak, but they are certainly in favor of the amendment to allow recovery homes or residential recovery centers. I would like to just briefly mention a couple of things about it. First, that this is not a treatment center, and that Although this particular location has a tendency to come up, that is the one that goes by the name of Lifeline Connect, run by the Apostolic Church, your review tonight is of issues relating to whether there should be an amendment. Later, presumably, there would be an issue about whether that particular location is appropriate. But as an example of one of the types of facilities that could be allowed under that amendment, I would just like to mention that that particular one, as most in the area would likely be, are not treatment centers. They are recovery homes. The persons involved in the location, in the residence, are tested weekly. They have given up their drug or alcohol addiction and are there to try to stay off. This is a great, great program. I think you'll find that in listening to, again, to the description of the facility, that it is really more like a dormitory than it is anything else, to the extent that there's any difference from it being different. To the extent that there is any difference from a dormitory, it would only be that the people there are in fact disabled as defined by the Fair Housing Act, and I believe it would be difficult to look upon it differently than one would look upon a facility such as the McKinley Y, the McKinley Foundation on campus, and the eight-story building that was built next to them as a project that is an accessory use to the church. This facility is an example of the type of facility that would be allowed, and I believe that you've heard many suggestions from people who are in favor of the project and a few suggestions from those who are not. I would simply request that you listen, please, to those who have concerns about it, and I believe you'll find that, as I mentioned in my letter that I forwarded to you and is appended to the materials tonight, that the concerns are really not founded. We had then concerns about people who were a quarter of a mile away, which seems to me to be quite a distance for a backyard. We have had an occasional comment about someone from a closer area about things like light or drainage or something which the facility was under the impression had been taken care of, and of course would be a subject for the application, not a subject for whether or not the particular amendment should be passed.
That's your time.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you very much.
Randall Brown. Can I also ask those of you who are choosing to speak that you state your name and your address, please?
Hi. Let me pull my little speech out here. Here's a copy for record. Hi, everybody. My name is Randall Brown. I live at and own 2408 North High Cross Road. I'm that quarter-mile guy that was just referred to. I've lived on High Cross Road now 5 years, and I've observed many times residents of the Recovery Center walk by my house on both sides and both directions. As most of you know, High Cross Road has no sidewalks, bike lanes, or even a suitable edge to walk on most of the time. I've observed groups from the center, mostly scattered in small numbers, walking the road without yield that causes opposing traffic to enter into the opposite lane or to slow to a near stop as right-of-way becomes open. This activity on behalf of the residents puts them in danger of being hit and endangers opposing drivers should an error occur. I live here. I live there. I rarely walk that road for the very same reason. I don't want to get creamed. As witnessed, it's apparent that the infrastructure of High Cross Road does not support the safety or general welfare of the Recovery Center residents. Throughout this process, I've been most concerned about uses at 2107 North High Cross Road. Because of this concern, I have asked the State of Illinois Department of Human Services Drug and Alcohol Abuse Licensing Division to investigate the facility in regards to licensure. Although the proponent and zoning administrator feel they have conducted appropriate fact-finding, I am not convinced that the use is as stated in the amendment. It's my gut feeling, you ever get a gut feeling? That the zoning amendment is flawed relative to the stated use. until the state makes a decision, the determination, I ask for a stay of action on the amendment and special uses. I would be willing to share that information with you as with the committee, should the stay be granted, and if proven to be as the amendment states, I would relent my opposition and retract the request. The good from this action will most likely result in requirements and guidance for the best functioning at the center. At worst, a cease and desist could be issued. In speaking with the zoning administrator on the phone 2 weeks ago, no action on behalf of the county has been taken because of lack of time of the zoning administrator to respond or act on 4 complaints filed on July 12th relative to unauthorized use at 2107 High Cross Road. This amendment has no mention of that use, and per policy 10.2.1, myself, Mr. Coble, Ms. Light, and Mr. Williams seek immediate action on your behalf to prevent said use. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Chris Doxeter.
Hi there, my name is Chris Doxeter. I live at 2107 High Cross Road. I can't even begin to tell you what this last year for me has been like. But I would like to thank you all for coming and celebrating my 1 year, because it's been a year for me today. August 3rd of 09, I entered a residential recovery center called Lifeline Connect. And I can't begin to tell you the impact that it's had on my life. I could go into many details about what the program entails. We're obviously drug tested on a weekly basis. We have a director of operations who is on site constantly. We are supervised. We are led by some of the greatest leaders that I've ever met in my life, and have helped me out in ways that I could never even begin to express to you all today. In this last year, I've gained tools and I've gained things that I would have never gained had I not come to this program and to this area. And as far as walking along High Cross Road and everything else, I'm not sure about that. But I am a runner, and I see many people running along High Cross Road, and I happen to be one of those that go out there and get my exercise. I've ran half marathons for the last 7 years, and it feels great to be getting back into the exercise that I used to do and be doing it drug and alcohol free, because without the program, I wouldn't be out there getting that exercise that I'm getting now. Not to get sidetracked, but I've lost approximately 20 pounds in the last 2 months by getting back into my running. So it's done me wonders. And I happen to have my father and my 2 daughters here, and just to make this as brief as I possibly can, they come to help celebrate my 1 year today, and they brought me a little card. And just so you can get just a small glimpse of what this last year has been like through my daughter's eyes, through my ex-wife's eyes, and a mother-in-law who I never would have thought would have wrote anything in a card. She also had a little something to say. So I just want to read this to you guys briefly. It's very short. First one's from my daughter Brooklyn over here in the pink. It says, "Dad, I'm so proud that you are a different man. I hope you keep this up and don't start drinking ever again. I'm very sorry I didn't really write you letters. I love you so much, and I've missed you too. Love, Brooke." My ex-mother-in-law wrote, "Chris, good for you. Keep it up. You deserve only the best. God be with you forever, Helen." My ex-wife wrote, "Chris, we are all so proud of you. I love the old you, but I really love the new you. It's always nice to see the new you. The sky's the limit with sobriety and God. Continue to pray for me, and I will see you soon. Love, your Tracy." And this from my oldest daughter, Brittany, over here. "Dad, I'm so proud of you. You mean the world to me. I'm excited to celebrate your 1 year with you and all the guys. Happy 1 year, Father. You are always in my heart. Love, Brittany." That's just a small glimpse of what this program and what programs like these can do for not only my life, but the kind of effect that it has on my entire family. It's completely changed my relationships with my family, my friends, and gave me an entire new family and group of friends that I can't even begin to tell you how much I love them all. I appreciate your time tonight. I ask for your support in passing this through, and just thank you guys for everything and for taking the time to listen to me tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Jeffrey Branson.
My name is Jeffrey Branson. I live at 1721 Cindy Lynn Street. I am a graduate of a program such as Lifeline Connect, and where I come from is a family of addiction, not only myself, but everybody in my family except for my mother. And the past, from when I was 12 years old until I was 20, a little over 21, I was addicted to anything, probably, well, methamphetamines and cocaine and marijuana. And like I said, last time I was here, I said that I could speak for not only myself but everybody that's I've been in program with. And we, on our own, trying to do this on our own, we never made it one day. But going through this program and more others like this, I'm pushing 3 years now of being clean. And it's set my mind on a totally new track. My thinking's different, and my relationships with people is different. And I just ask that you pass this amendment. Thanks.
Thank you. Roy Lane.
Roy Lane, 1405 Young and Dry Grand Total. I've been a volunteer with this program for, the last few years, probably, something like that. I've volunteered, helping do fundraising for the program. I've taken a 40-hour class, which is the Genesis process, which specializes in relapse prevention. I did this through such programs. I've seen lives changed. I've seen families reunited. I've seen marriages put back together. But without programs like this, none of these miracles would be possible. My wife and I, which is sitting right here, feel so blessed to be a part of this program. Not only they helped my family so much. Seeing the steps that they've taken, the maturity that they gain over a year. I would gladly welcome any one of these men into my family. I would not hesitate to bring a single one of these men into my house with my family, which my wife and I do. We have been over at least once a month. And it's not strange for me to walk into my daughter's bedroom and see one of these guys playing Barbies with her. She's 2 years old. That's how much I trust every single one of these guys in this program. And I can't stress the importance of programs like this. And I just urge you to vote on this amendment. Thank you.
Rogers.
Thank you, Chairman, Board, and staff. In regards to the amendment to the zoning ordinance concerning residential recovery centers, I once again encourage you to pass this amendment for these reasons. One, we have a great need for residential recovery centers in our community. This is a social service that enables some to recover from the destructive lifestyle of substance abuse. If you ask any judge, if you ask any law enforcement personnel or public safety personnel this question, what is the one common culprit that contributes to the greatest percent of habitual criminal behavior in our community? The answer most often is substance abuse. So many are in need of intensive health and recovery, and for help and recovery and restoration from the effects of substance abuse, and residential recovery centers are a part of the solution and a positive influence in the community. Second reason, local governments throughout the United States have adopted zoning ordinances to accommodate thousands of faith-based residential recovery centers. Such facilities and programs have earned the applause of judges, mayors, law enforcement agencies, governors, and even presidents of the United States. One example is Teen Challenge USA. Teen Challenge is a faith-based program associated with the Missions Division of the Assemblies of God Church. They have over 250 residential recovery centers in the United States, and three of which are in Illinois. We contacted one of their executives, Doug Lance, and asked him this question. Where are most of your sites located, rural or urban? His reply was that 60% of the USA located sites are in rural settings, either in agricultural districts or in smaller cities. Teen Challenge is just one example. There are many faith-based organizations, churches, and ministries that operate residential recovery centers locally in Illinois and all of the states of the Union. I believe that properly operated and licensed residential recovery centers can provide a much-needed social service to our community by providing life skills training, employment training, educational opportunities, and spiritual and character development training. Men can become productive citizens of their community once again. Third reason and last, as a pastor of a local church, I believe it is fundamentally important that we have the opportunity to facilitate a residential recovery center to enable us to effectively minister to a segment of our society that is in such a need. And thank you for consideration on these comments.
Chad May.
Good evening. I'm Chad May. I live at 2016 East Vermont Avenue in Urbana here. I'm a former resident of a program such as what's been being discussed tonight. I honestly don't know where I'd be if it weren't for these types of programs. This May, past May 17th, I celebrated my 3 years sober. Prior to that, due to a car accident back in the late 90s, I got addicted to prescription pain medicine and spent the next 8 years of my life consumed by it. And, you know, I wasn't looking for a good time. This was due to a prescribed medication. It's a very big problem in our world today. Now, I'm a functional citizen. I hold a full-time job. Had that for almost 3 years. I have a wife. And we just had our first child. I've totally been renewed because I've got a second chance due to a residential recovery center. As I was going through this program, I learned tools, like I've been mentioned, the Genesis process, the life skills, that helped me stay sober.
help me stay productive in my life, moving forward instead of falling back to where I was at. Like I said, it's been 3 years. When I came up here, my life was broken. My family didn't want me. I didn't have anybody. But this program has turned my life around. I got a beautiful child over there. And it wouldn't have been possible if it weren't for a program like this. I strongly urge you to accept this, to pass it, whatever you need to do with it, to keep these things going. We need more of them, not less of them. Thank you for your time.
Randall Brown.
I appreciate you taking time to hear us out this evening, and I'm going to try to be as brief as possible. Number one, I just want to say that the reason, first of all, my name is Randy Brown. I'm director of Lifeline Connect, which is a program much like what you're considering that would be facilitating, would be used in this amendment that you're considering tonight. I've worked with people with substance abuse problems for about 16 or 17 years and been in ministry for about 18 years. And we're seeing today that churches are stepping up and meeting the needs in people's lives in all kinds of areas. We see all kinds of different things and services that churches offer. And this is one thing that is, even though it's been debated, is a perfect fit for a church community to do, the ministry of helping people with substance abuse problems. We saw the need for stability when we were trying to help people in the past that had substance abuse problems. They didn't have a safe environment. They didn't have a drug-free environment. People with substance abuse problems, one of the main struggles that they have is in the area of developing and maintaining relationships. In the church community, there's not a safer place to learn how to have safe relationships and develop new friendships and know how to manage those. And I say it's a perfect fit for recovery centers just like this. I would like to say also that I have personally witnessed the success of many men, just like these men that have been through this program. And I think the fact that it is successful, that it's needed, it's successful, it's in operation, it's working. I haven't had any disturbance complaints in 3 3/4 years that we've been doing, whatever it's been going on. It's been in the community that long. I do appreciate the gentleman that spoke earlier that was concerned with the safety of possible residents walking up the road for the last 3.5 years that he's witnessed. I am concerned why he waited until now to let us know he was concerned about that. This works. The number that you're considering, I think, is at 25. And a smaller number would be acceptable, I guess, but the more numbers you have that you're working with, you have more diversity in that recovery community. There's a better chance for that person to bond with somebody else that's in that center if you have the opportunity to bring in more diversity with the more numbers you have. You can also be a lot more efficient in the teaching of your classes. Sometimes we have guys coming at different times during the year, and so we can group them up in larger groups because some guys have already had classes and some haven't. So the larger number that you all are considering for the amendment, I hope that gets passed close to that number because it's a great help to do that. And again, I just want to be brief. Let's just thank you. You can see the people that are here. We are very passionate about this. And we've seen the success. We've seen the lives touched. And we do appreciate you taking the time to hear us out. And I do urge you to pass the amendment. Thank you.
Thomas Martin.
Hi, my name is Thomas Martin. I live at 1721 Cindy Lynn Street, and I was a member of the residence rehab for about 2 years. Before
joining the rehab. My life was a wreck. I had no purpose. My only purpose was to get high and to stay high. I had nothing. I had nothing but the clothes on my back. My family didn't want anything to do with me. And I didn't have a driver's license. I didn't have a car. And now I have a job. I have a car. I've been clean for over 2.5 years. And I now have a life of purpose and discipline and structure because of this program. And I urge you all to vote in favor for this amendment. Thank you.
Renee Pride.
Hello, my name is Renee Pride, and I live in Mahama, Illinois. And welcome to another random meeting. I really hope you enjoy your job. I'm done with these meetings as much as you are. Thank you for your service to our community. Please know that we do appreciate your time and effort, even when it's not affecting our daily life, and we're not here to, you know, be in all of the meetings and comment on everything. In relation to the text amendment that's being discussed, I would first like to state my support for its approval, and I encourage you, of course, to do the same. There has been quite a bit of information that's presented to you on this matter, and I have to say I'm glad it's not my responsibility to look at that 118 pages from the last time. I hope you have fun reviewing that. Personally, I'm not a fan of government getting involved in being a solution to every contention that arises in the community. It does concern me to listen to a host of unfounded accusations that are unsubstantiated concerns that serve only... Excuse me, I'm pregnant. I'm trying to get used to the different breathing. The unsubstantiated concerns that serve to cause confusion and to delay a rather simple process. Had the citizens against this amendment had real heartfelt concerns regarding the neighborhood environment and any effects on such, I would think it would be logical to raise these concerns with a quite peaceful neighbor, inquire for more information, and then, after finding out all of the facts, then address it, those issues together. The most outspoken citizen in the area has been aware of the presence of a rehabilitation center in the area for quite some time, yet has only chose to come to a public meeting rather than attempting to any private resolution. Again, my name is Renee Pride, and yes, my father is Pastor David Rogers, who you've heard from. I must tell you, he's one of the most compassionate and gentle-spirited people you may ever meet. In the past meetings and the public newspaper articles, when questionable data has been presented, it was my initial personal desire to take each out of my mind and let my own letter have better. But in all of the requests for avoidances of references to specific sites has been blatantly ignored, I wanted nothing more than to be a liar and stand up and contest. In the long run, it doesn't serve anybody any purpose. It's also not conducive to positive relationships, so I value those. The group behind this proposal has chosen a very peaceful, much more peaceful approach, and because I have the utmost respect for all of them, that because they are very passionate about drug rehabilitation, being upstanding citizens, and also affecting the lives of others for the good of all mankind, I choose to support whatever course of action they think is best. What I would like to request of you is the full support, of course, on this amendment, but tonight my only request will actually be that you listen, which you've done a great job of, raise any and all concerns that you have, and most importantly, ask questions. Question any data that is presented to you as quote fact, and make sure that there's no misinformation that you're listening to or unfounded emotional accusations that are allowed to be presented to you for this decision. Thank you again for your time and attention and the respect that you show to each one of us to listen.
Roger Eaton.
Hello, my name is Roger Jacob Eaton, and I live at 2107 High Cross Road. I am currently the Director of Operations of a residential recovery center, such as the type we are discussing. I have personally witnessed residential recovery centers change people's lives. I have personally witnessed them put families back together and heal them. I have seen addicts that face certain death
transformed into assets of their community. This is a life or death decision, and I have seen life pulled from death through residential recovery centers. Thank you so much for hearing us out. Thank you for your patience. I hope this doesn't take too long. God bless you.
Les Cotton.
Hello, my name is Les Cotton. I live at 1721 Cindy Lynn Street in Urbana, Illinois. A little bit about myself. I am a graduate from a faith-based recovery center. I am for the amendment. I'm passionate about it. A little bit about myself. I come from a well-to-do family. Was raised in church. Went on to college on a scholarship and got caught into partying, which led to drinking, which eventually led to drugs. I found myself down the road with a couple of DUIs, reprimanded from the nursing board, put in the recovery nurse program twice, failed, permanently lost a nursing license, and I was sent to a treatment facility. It was not a recovery center. It was a 30-day treatment, and basically charged me $14,000 to tell me I had a problem, sent me on my way without any kind of support, any kind of accountability, just basically told me how the addictive mind functions, taught me a little bit about the limbic system, endorphins, dopamines. When I truly decided to seek help, and I wanted this for myself, I went to a faith-based recovery center. I sought it out, and it really changed my life due to the fact of, one, is it's a volunteer organization. It's nonprofit. People that are here in these type of organizations are passionate. They're not doing it for money. They have a desire to see lives change. They pour into you. I feel like it's a safe environment because it's at a church. What better place to experience recovery than people that love you, that are compassionate, that are aware of your surroundings and what you're going through? People come very broken, very hurt. I personally came from a broken engagement. I lost a great job. House was in foreclosure, bankruptcy. But these places, they provide a safe environment, especially in a rural area, for it provides a microcosm of life. They not only teach you how to deal with life on life's terms, but they teach you all the way from finances to attitudes. They teach you about character, integrity, or work ethic. And I stand before you today being 16 months clean. And I just enrolled back into college, and it would not be possible. I would not be here before you today if it was not for a residential rehab recovery center. Thank you.
Joan Grubb. Oh, must be John.
Sorry.
My name is John Grubb. I live in 1902 Shelley Court in Urbana. And like earlier Mr. Brown that spoke, I walk on that road. My wife walks on it. I leave home in the morning. I often see men out there walking and wave to them. I've been in my home 11 years, had no issues, no problems with the recovery center being located there. I've stated before that I really think it's important for the board to approve this amendment. And it's often not very much that we can do as individuals to help people, but this is certainly one. Reminds me of the story of a guy sailing in World War II who sustained a blast of the ship and fell off into the ocean. As we rescued by the destroyer, placed back on his ship, which eventually sunk, and he was back in the water the second time. And during this time, he just had a real limited life preserver system. When he eventually pulled out of the water the last time, he was in great physical harm and disabled. He got to looking at his vest and said, "Firestone Akron Ohio," and it had a number on it. And after the war, he wondered about that number. Firestone to find out. He found out that his mother made that life vest. She made the life vest for her son that saved his life two or three times in the ocean. We don't get very many opportunities to help people. And we need to take every opportunity we can. We've heard the testimonies of these young men who've had their lives changed. And the evidence is here. It's clearly here before you that there's healing going on, healing of families, healing of minds, healings of marriages, restoration. And this is important, and I think it's a wonderful opportunity for you to do something for these men and for men like them. And it's happening right in my neighborhood, and I'm very much in favor of it. Thank you.
Thank you. And Helen Mirren.
My name is Helen Mirren. I'm short. And I live at 612 West Nevada Street in Urbana. I have lived there for 37 years. I'm a retired speech-language pathologist. And I have worked with the people at Lifeline for the last 3.5 years. They come to me. They have done indoor work, outdoor work, just anything I need them to do. And these people have been well-mannered, polite, hard-working, and really good to be around, highly motivated. These are people who are here voluntarily. They want to do well. This is a highly motivated group. And the bottom line for me is that graduates from a program like this in the country are people, first of all, who wanted to be there. Secondly, when they graduate or when they finish, they're going to have jobs. And they're going to pay taxes. And they're going to support the local economy. So instead of pulling community resources to help themselves or to help them, they are giving back to the community resources. So others can be helped or can be put to other use. To me, this is a very important thing. I strongly recommend, please, that you pass this amendment. I think this is a very worthwhile project. It doesn't cost the community anything. We're self-supporting. And in terms, the community will get a lot back. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. That concludes public participation. Thank you all for your contributions. Oh. Is there a second one? Are you Miss Light? Okay, well then you're next.
Was I supposed to bring it over here?
Yes.
I am Jermaine Light, and I live at 2402 North High Cross Road. No, I really didn't know about Lifeline in response to someone who spoke a few times back. I really didn't know about Lifeline at all until the summer, in fact, right before a hearing. So I really haven't known about it very long, and neither have my neighbors. Just for the future, to the church, to the Apostolic Church, it might be a good idea to have a meeting and invite the neighbors and explain what's going on. Just, I think it would help with communications to let people know, get us a chance to ask questions. Probably would have solved a lot of, you know, problems. But, the people of the church, the participants of the program, citizens need to know that we all realize the need for rehabilitation, drug and alcohol rehabilitation. We all congratulate all the participants who have been successful and who are working and struggling toward being successful, and the volunteers who are dedicated. We congratulate you. I mean, we know that this type of thing is needed. but it needs to be done legally. It needs to be done in accordance to zoning laws that all the other neighbors have to follow. And my complaint that I put in, a written complaint on July 12th, along with some other people, that the yard waste cleanup and auto detailing construction and cleanup business has been operating in an unauthorized way, in other words, against zoning ordinance as they stand now, as it stands now. And I would ask that this situation cease and desist until the legalities are straightened out. I also want to know from the board, with all due respect, I don't think that you've responded to me, at least not that I have seen, and you haven't responded to my complaint that I know of, and I don't think you've taken any action. And I would kind of like to know why not. Or if you have taken an action or responded and I'm in error, please straighten me out.
The board cannot respond at this time, so thank you for the question.
Okay. Thank you for letting me talk.
No problem. Now, can I safely conclude public participation? Okay. In accordance with the Committee of the Whole's request, we are going to adjust our agenda to take up zoning case 668-18-10. And then we'll go back and pick up facilities and move forward.
Madam Chair, I have a communication.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry, I forgot. Mr. Gertz.
Thank you. Last month, I sat down in a meeting with the United States Department of Agriculture Director in the United States. We discussed a new agriculture policy that was going to be initiated by the federal government, and this is a regional roadmap to meeting the biofuels goals of the renewable fuel standard by 2022. The United States Department of Agriculture is developing a comprehensive regional strategy to help recharge the rural American economy. The strategy targets barriers to the development of a successful biofuel market that will achieve or surpass the current U.S. renewable fuel standards as set out in the Energy Dependence and Security Act. What I've done is, this is a 21-page report. I won't read it all.
Thank you.
but what I have done is given the report to the Farm Bureau and a copy to our administrator. And if you want to learn more about this national program, the U.S. Department of Agriculture website under Rural Development will help you to get that report. And I finally see some action by the federal government on biofuels. Thank you.
Any other communications from board members? Okay. We will declare communications closed. So now we're ready for the amendment to the zoning ordinance as reflected in zoning case 668-18-10.
I move adoption of the amendment.
Motion by Mr. Betts, seconded by Mr. Sapp. Discussion. Was that Mr. Benzel? Okay. Mr. Benzel. The lighting's not so great back there. Discussion. Mr. Kurtz.
First, I want to congratulate every one of the gentlemen who spoke tonight and those that are in this program. This is a difficult task you've taken. To beat substance abuse is one of the hardest things anyone can do. Many of us in this room have personal experience on how destructive substance abuse can be in families. Programs like AA, programs like the drug court, and programs like your recovery program are not only important, they're critical in our society today. We have an abuse of substance that has literally overwhelmed us in this country, and we need more of the type of effort that is now being done by this recovery center. not only locally but nationally as well. And so I will vote for this amendment. And congratulations to each and every one of you for being able to build your families back and get on the road to good citizenship and reduce the crime rate in our community. Thank you so much.
Mr. James.
I supported this when we first talked about it, and I still am supporting it. I do feel, though, there were some good comments made on both sides, and I would feel that some of the comments should be taken in, and it's a little late now to hold some of the public meetings, or, and if they were held, that's fine, but I heard some comments by some of the lady that spoke, Ms. White, that it would have been nice that the neighborhood would have been included and they all could have sat down and talked, and much like we do at the county board level, if we're going out on any major project, we include the public whether or not they show up. But with that said, I think it's great that people are changing their lives and they have the motivation to do so, and that says a lot, because a lot of times, like the one gentleman said, if you go somewhere and you pay a lot of money, that's basically all you're doing is paying a lot of money. And I'm glad that with his college degree or soon to be college degree, he's realized that, so he's already learning the lesson.
Ms. Anderson.
Kind of following along in that theme, other than Champaign, there is a group home that's just a block and a half from me. I walk by it often, but I was not aware this is a mental health facility in a residential area. Many of the neighbors were not aware. It no problem. I only discovered it when I was out knocking doors and found, that people are living there. So although I understand the comments from the person thinking that maybe residents should be informed if you've gone through the process and, to establish a group home or this kind of program, that's apparently not always required. I guess I would, John was just here a minute ago. Oh, you're up here now. I wonder if you would like to make any comments, though, about Ms. White's comment about the July complaint.
Well, I know we received complaints. I don't recall the complaints asking for any response. If I overlooked that response, then I apologize. I believe many members of the board know that when we find an unlawful use, and they're... we don't shut them down. I have never known this county board to ask for any unauthorized use to be shut down. First of all, we don't have that power. It has to go through the courts. We have to get an injunction from the court. If we're aware of immediate threat to public health or safety, we come to this committee and we ask for guidance. We did that with the shed in rural Mohammed. The committee was comfortable with letting the shed continue because they were making progress towards getting the necessary approvals. Ultimately, they failed, and they were left doing just a temporary use. In this instance, I'm not aware of any immediate threat to public health or safety. I am aware that this recovery center has been going on unlawfully, but the last I heard, there were only 5 people. Frankly, legally, we would be on very shaky grounds trying to stop something that consisted of 5 unrelated individuals living together, particularly if they're disabled and if it's being done by a church. They want to expand beyond that, so they're trying to get the necessary infrastructure in place so they can get their approvals. Also, I told Mr. Randall Brown in the past week, it was not because of lack of time that I didn't shut down the Lifeline Connect. I told him about this way that the county operates. What I didn't have time to do was I told him I would have the state's attorney verify this issue regarding state licensure. Mr. Brown has apparently seen fit to go to the state relevant state agency and ask them, and that's fine. He has every right to do that. Can they get an answer from them quicker than I'll get from the state's attorney? I don't know. I told him I would have an answer by the time this board decides at their September general board meeting, which is a month and a half away at this point. This use has not received special treatment. It's been treated the same as we treat any other use. The only complaint our office has ever had about this use was in the beginning, people were hitchhiking on High Cross Road. I talked to Pastor Rogers. As far as I know, that was resolved. Now, if there are still people out there walking along High Cross Road, that would be a wonderful topic to discuss when this particular use comes up for whatever authorization is actually needed. And since you asked, Jan, I'll just comment that board members received a new memo on this case tonight. It was at your desk. The memo has staff memos from the city of Champaign and the city of Urbana. This case will go to planning commission meetings at both cities this week. I'm happy to say that the city of Champaign has a recommendation of no protest, and I'm even happier to say we resolved the issues with the city of Urbana today, and I believe the city of Urbana will have no protest. So in regards to municipal concerns, I think when we come back in September, we'll be ready for adoption of the amendment in the way that it was recommended by the ZBA. That's all I had, unless you have other questions.
Mr. Nudo?
Well, you know, this, I always like John's reports because I thought this was part of my book club. This is one of his longer epistles, but it's very thorough. I have a question to start with and then a comment. I remember vividly, I asked the question when Carl Weber came in the first time. I asked him, why 30? How did we arrive at 30? And he had an answer. And in reading this, I did read it, John, is the only thing we downsized to 25. And the only thing I can read in here that would indicate there was a reasoning for it, I couldn't find any code issues, or if there is, please explain to me. The city planner of Champaign had a request to downsize to 16. And I wondered if that had an effect on the request. And, it's interesting about this whole thing, and you can answer the question after I make the statement, is that there's no stimulus money here. There's no state money. Neither entity, federal or state, has any money to give. This is just kind people helping people. And you know, I'll go through a wall for these kinds of things. I mean, whatever the hurdle is, I'll go through it to try and do what's right. And I think a lot of people at this board feel the same way. It's kind of a change of pace for some of the things that we go through. And I just wonder, why would the reduction from 30 to 25? Why can't we have 30?
That's a great question, Mr. Nudo, and I would suggest that you can have 30 if you want to make it 30. When this was originally presented to the board, we had a limit of 30. We also had a by right in the R4 district. Once we got into the public hearing, and frankly, I did a more thorough review of municipal ordinances, I realized they were looking at this as similar to a community living facility, and they had a maximum of 16, and I didn't know if we'd be able to convince them to ignore that limit. And as it was presented to me, the one proposed use needed 25. I myself had bumped it up to 30 because I've learned if people say 25, they're probably going to justify something bigger before it's all said and done. But when I saw this issue with municipalities, I reduced it to 25 because that's what I had been told.
Madam Chairman, could I request we suspend the rules and ask a representative of the church to give us their need?
Second.
Any discussion on suspending the rules? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Ladies and gentlemen, this question is very touchy, and we appreciate it. At the beginning, we were trying to decide what we should use as a number, And we knew that there is a distinct advantage to having more people, because about half of the people who are there are halfway through, they're out and working in various places in the community, and the other half are more focused in the location. And as I said to the ZBA, can you imagine going to Centennial High School and you don't know anybody there, and you have a class of seven? What are the chances that you're going to be able to connect to somebody else? Because connection is really what it's all about. It's not just the name of the facility. And so the need for more people has been based upon the need to allow these young men to find someone in the organization to connect. In addition, they have almost all volunteer assistance, but that's not going to last forever, and they'd like to have a number that can actually financially be able to support proper payments to the people who are at least on site. We looked at the other possible special uses and in Ag 2, and one of them is a 15-unit motel room. So we figured, well, that's two people per room, that's 30 people. Some had thought more, some had thought less, and that's how we got to 30. I think that while we are passionate about needing more people, we're even more passionate about it passing, and it sounded at one point like 25 might help it pass, and so we said, okay, we give up, go to 25. The fact is that at any given time, in this kind of a facility, there will be several fewer than the maximum, because there's some coming in, some going. It's not like a semester program where everybody arrives at the same time. There'll be some coming in on day 1, day 10, day 40, and so even though there may be a maximum of 25, they would expect to be able to assist only, say, 18 or 20. If there's a maximum of 30, they may be able to assist more like 23 or 25. The real reason why they tell me, well, I don't want to say it that way. I think the biggest reason is the connection. But certainly the second biggest reason is they want to help more people. The more people they can help, the better. And however you come out on numbers, I can assure you that we appreciate your consideration and this thought.
Mr. Nudo? Well, then, on the basis of his comments, I would move to amend the number be increased to 30.
Second.
Motion's been made to amend.
Point of order. I'm going to ask Mr. Powell. Point of order. Don't we have to amend the findings of fact? Don't we have to say that the Zoning Board of Appeals was in error and that the record should reflect that the number 25 is erroneous, and in fact the record supports 30. You know, this isn't a piece of legislation that's our resolution. This is a decision that we're making coming on a record from the Zoning Board of Appeals. And it seems to me, frankly, from public participation, I was tracking, we've had our own little hearing tonight. We heard from just about everybody the Zoning Board of Appeals heard from. And isn't the correct procedure that the findings of fact are in error?
You know, Mr. Beckett, I'm not trying to avoid your question, but that's a legal question that exceeds, frankly, my knowledge. That would certainly be the best way to document why the change was made. And you may well find at your September meeting that might generate protest. I don't know. But whether or not that would be a necessary part in order to make it all lawful and proper, I really can't say.
I'm asking Mr. Nudo if you would consider that a friendly amendment.
Yes, I would. In light of page 43 It says under status, the second sentence, the committee should make a preliminary recommendation by either affirming the recommendation of the ZBA or remanding the case back for a different recommendation. So I don't know, you know me, I don't know much about county wheels in motion, but whatever makes it right. I don't know if we can take a straw poll to give an indication to ZBA that that's what our desire is, but I do think we ought to do it right so that we don't have any legal consequences.
Well, that generated discussion. Mr. Benzel, then Mr. Betts.
I guess my only question is this going to create any timing issues at all for the organization?
Mr. Betts?
I guess the question I have is if the issue is one of disagreeing with the findings of fact, couldn't we amend the motion that Mr. Nuda has made to say that we expressly disagree with the findings of fact by the ZBA on the point with regard to 25 versus 30 and make that part of Mr. Nuda's motion? And if he did that, I think he'd probably be legal. Would you do that?
Whatever you say. Mr. Beckett, do you agree with what I'm saying?
Okay.
Can you do that?
Is that agreeable to the seconder?
Second.
Yes. Okay.
Second.
Mr.
Okay.
Where are we? Mr. Sapp?
I have a question then for Mr. Hall. Then would that create a potential greater risk of a protest, did you indicate? I mean, Champaign and Urbana have already seen this. Protest.
Well, no matter what you do, this does not match either of their ordinances. That's well documented. Champaign did not protest because we proved it's never going to happen in their jurisdiction sufficiently to meet their concerns. Urbana, it's in an area that's not likely to be annexed. If you follow this recommendation, we'll let them know immediately that the committee upped it from 25 to 30. If they protest in September, you could make a similar motion to bump it back down to 25 in order to deal with the protest. And so that way, you would be providing more flexibility and having everything, you know, be proper.
Mr. Betts.
The other aspect of what John just said is we could have a roll call vote on the amendment. If you have sufficient numbers on that roll call to establish that you have an overwhelming majority, they can make the protest all they like, but they don't have the votes. And I suggest that what we do is have the roll call, and I think it's going to be close to unanimous, and let them protest.
Mr. Jay.
No, I really would like to muddy the waters a little more. Al didn't do a good enough job. What would be wrong if we just approved the amendment that's before us tonight, and then if this five additional persons is that important, let the ZBA look at that again, and we could address that later. But we could move this forward tonight with what we've got in front of us. Does that make any sense?
It makes sense. It would cost us the time of running a new tax amendment to deal with that increase, but that surely shouldn't take much effort. And, you know, that's another alternative.
And you know, I'm against spending money.
And vote for the one on the table. Ms. Anderson.
Well, on other issues, zoning issues, when we've had a recommendation from the ZBA, it seems to me when we wanted to change it, you have told us that we would have to have some reasoning behind it. If we go ahead with wanting to up it to the 30, would we want to include some of the reasoning that Mr. Weber gave us, that this would be numbers that would allow for better connectedness relationships? And I can't remember all the wording. Would that be helpful or not?
I thought the actual motion adequately addressed everything.
It'd be enough.
Mr. Schrader?
John, you obviously heard back from cities of Champaign, Urbana, no protest, this amendment. You had any word from Savoy? Were they contacted?
Well, this amendment will only allow this use in the jurisdiction of a home rule municipality, and so that's only Champaign and Urbana.
Okay, that covers that. I seem to remember after a few years in zoning hearings that, and I could be wrong, I could stand corrected, but we've changed some wording before in text amendments, and if I can go back and remember what Peg Rawls always corrected us in ZBA, as long as it's not so substantial a change, that can be, I mean, it can be done. And on top of that, I know we've amended finding the facts before to substantiate minimal changes within text amendments. Now, like I said, I could be wrong, but I know we've done that in the past.
That's my recollection too, John.
Mr. Betts.
As the original maker of the motion, I'm going to consider the amendment that Mr. Ludo had made friendly so that we can vote on the whole thing at the same time.
Roll call, please.
Is there another roll call?
Okay.
Any other discussion? If not, call the roll.
Anderson.
Being the first, I just want to make sure. If I vote yes, I'm accepting the amendment to change to the first. Yes.
You voted for the whole thing.
Right. It's the amendment was friendly, so it's the whole motion, Jan.
Yeah. Okay, and I said, understanding that, yes. I just want to make sure of what I was doing.
Beckett.
Yes.
Denzel.
Yes.
Betts.
Yes.
Cohort.
Yes.
Dennis.
Yes.
Gladney.
Yes.
James.
Yes.
Jay.
Yes.
Jones.
Yes.
Kurtz.
Yes.
Langenheim.
Yes.
McGinty.
Yes.
Michaels.
Yes.
Nudo.
Yes.
O'Connor.
Absolutely.
Rich. Rosales.
Yes.
Sapp.
Yes.
Schrader.
Yes.
Weibel.
Yes.
Wysocki.
Yes. Carries unanimously.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're welcome to stay, but if you need to leave, I can understand that. It's already been a long hour. You're welcome. We're going to move back to the county facilities part.
Thank you.
Well, I understand. You know, I got your email yesterday and put it on the agenda for the meeting.
Is this fast enough for you?
Yes. It's more effective, but I talked about it.
Well, good. That was my plan, too. I'm glad we're all on the same page. Jeez. I'm going to go back on vacation. All right. Facilities. I'm sorry. Short meetings. That's what I like. We have page 19, the project update report for the courthouse exterior clock and bell tower renovation project. We entertain a motion to receive and place on file.
So moved. Second.
Moved by James, second by Langenheim. I'd ask Mr. Reinhart, what's the status of any work remaining on the project?
All stone work has been completed, all tub going, waterproofing, exterior gravel that was used, placed around the building has been removed, fresh black dirt has been put back on the west and the south side. We're waiting for just a little better weather before we reseed the south new dirt. And as you can see, the sod has been installed in front and it's getting cleaned up, and we should be finalizing any time now with request for final payment.
Mr. Jaywood asked me to ask this question. We were told that after the chemicals, the preservatives were sprayed on by Mr. White from White Borgannoni, that we would receive maintenance type instructions for us to utilize and follow over the years to preserve this building. Has that happened?
No, it has not. Those instructions will come with the final closeout documents, like, as they do with all projects. So we have not received them yet.
Mr. Jay, is there anything else I should ask? Okay. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The Gill Building Replacement Planning Update on RFP for Design Build. I discussed this with Mr. Reinhart. We don't have a document yet for your review. I'm told that we likely will have it by the 19th of the month and have it in your hands. Time is of some concern. I guess what I would ask is that let's take a look at it. It'll be available to be acted on if you feel comfortable at the full board meeting. And if you don't feel comfortable, quite frankly, I would think the best thing to do is move it, defer it to September. This is the first time we've done a project this way. And so while time is always a problem, you know, in these building projects, but we need to make sure we do this right. But you look at it when we get it, and we'll see what you want to do when we get it at the board meeting, okay? Is there any questions of Mr. Reinhart or me about this RFP? Do you have any comment?
Just the work has been progressing. We have taken soil samples out on the site, on the selected site. We're expecting a report anytime. All these documents are what we're waiting on to finish putting all our RFP together.
Okay. Building efficiency summary, Mr. Reiner.
A year ago, I was asked to supply a building cost per square foot for electricity. This is a roughly a year later update, and I have targeted strictly the Brookings and the courthouse building, strictly because these two buildings are the ones we have been targeting also for the energy grants, the efficiency grants. So as you can see on page 20, that our actual cost per square foot for the courthouse has gone up a little bit this past year. I believe that is due to two reasons. First of all, we are under construction. There was a lot of construction equipment, saws, construction trailers, and the building was open. There was holes in it everywhere, so we'd expected to see a little bit increase. The actual usage for the Brookings Administration Building has dropped by approximately 32 cents a square foot in this past year. The documents on page 21 and 22 are supporting the summary on page 20. So,
all right. Any discussion? Will we accept the place on file? Someone?
Hello.
Ms. Cohort?
Second.
Second by Mr. Jay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Physical plant monthly report. Anything specifically you want to comment about?
No. All right. Nothing.
Entertain a motion to receive, place on file. You can do that then. Second. Moved by James, second by Rosales. Ms. Michaels.
I just have a quick question. On page 26 here, I see that the electric bill has gone up about 26%. Is that pretty much standard with what the way it was last year? It just seemed like a huge jump.
Yes. Keep in mind that these are the two reports you received were for May and June.
Right.
We're lagging behind strictly because it takes us a month to get the bills and get them recorded and stuff. And it's typically what you see every summer as the air conditioners come on and it gets hot outside. That's what you'll see.
So this going up 26% from May to June is a normal thing? It
yes.
just seemed like a lot.
Yes.
All right.
Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Update on our courthouse electric efficiency grant. Received July 6, 2010, right? Any comments or questions? We have a closed session. I'll defer that to later. And we have no items for regular.
Mr. Hall, first item under environment and land use is consideration of a recreation and entertainment license. This is for an bar called The Stop, 3515 North Cunningham Avenue.
Move approval.
Moved by Mr. Schrader, seconded by Mr. Kurtz. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. I'm going to defer item B to the chair's report so we can move down the line. We've already addressed C. We're going down to item D. This is a notice and enforcement of state requirement for compliance with commercial building code. Can I have a motion?
Absolutely.
Motion by Mr. Beckett, seconded by Mr. Rosales. Discussion. Oh, Mr. O'Connor?
I need some enlightenment on this, what precipitated the whole thing.
Last year, the legislature approved State Bill 0138, and the bill became effective in January 1 of 2010, but it really becomes effective on July 1, 2011, when any county that issues occupancy permits for commercial buildings, and commercial building is anything with more than any residential building with more than two units or any non-residential building, if the county has not adopted a building code, we can't approve occupancy unless the building is certified to comply with the codes specified in the act. What that means is, starting on July 1 of 2010, any commercial permit that we approve, if we don't make these folks aware of this and they have a year to complete, they could come in on July 2nd, 2011, and now there's a requirement for complying with the code. And I want to have your agreement that I can make them aware of that starting now, and I want to do a handout that people can come in and pick up at any time to see what this requirement is.
Is there any other discussion? Oh, Mr. Schrader?
I had a question on enforcement, John. We're just, with this, we're just telling people, making them aware of the change in this. Who's doing the code checks on who's enforcing the code?
The act specifies what a qualified inspector, what makes a qualified inspector. Any zoning use permit applicant will have to go out and find a qualified inspector. And that inspector will submit a statement.
Okay, but okay, I that's what I thought I read, but I want clarification that they have to come in if they have a non-residential building. Does that include non-agricultural too?
Yeah, agriculture buildings, as far as I know, are exempted.
Okay.
But like,
for clarification, too, I want to clarify that, too. So they have to come in with an authorized individual who's licensed or whatever in codes and say, here, I've got this. Can I build now if I meet all the rest of your requirements in your zoning ordinance?
Yeah, but again, it's not quite that logical. They build it, and then hopefully they'll get a statement saying that it certifies it's built according to the code.
So we can go ahead and issue a building permit, and then, okay, we can't, I mean, we can't stop them from occupying it.
They have to have an occupancy permit from us, and the state law says we cannot grant that occupancy permit unless we have the certification that it complies with the code.
So if it is occupied and they don't have that, do we send the sheriff out and throw them all out?
I hope that doesn't happen, John. But that's my greatest fear.
I mean, that's what we've got here.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Mr. Sapp.
Do we have these inspectors readily available around here for builders to contact to come in and inspect their building?
Yeah, I think the standards are not that high. I think that there's plenty of people in this area. I don't think that can be said for a lot of parts of the state, though.
Mr. Jay?
If I could follow up on that, John, I'd like to be sure that they're available. We run into some requirements trying to get burn permits that you have to get through the state. You have to get their people. And their people are around here. Their people's in the bigger metropolitan areas. So I'd like to know what really that does mean for our protection in the future.
I could report back to you, Mr. Jay, do an informal survey and try to develop a list.
I'm sorry, I didn't need it. I just want to be sure that we're not getting into an area that we can't control. If I built this building and I want to occupy it, and I come to you and I say, well, I've got this certified architect that says it's okay, I need to know that that's what the state's saying. I don't really like these state mandates to start with, as you could probably tell, but I want to be sure we don't get caught in this trap with the state of Illinois.
And is there anything you want me to do?
Yeah, you just be sure we don't get caught in that trap.
Can I just ask, would an ordinary home inspector qualify as someone who could inspect these buildings?
If they're certified by a nationally recognized building official certification organization, and frankly, I have to admit, I don't know if they're likely to be certified by a national building official certification organization or by a national home inspector certification.
They have state licensing for home inspectors. It is a certified. It used not to be until about 2 years ago. But I don't know. I can't answer the question if that causes them to do.
Could you look into that?
Yeah.
Non-residential.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Yeah. All those in favor of John's decision, John's decision to deal with the state requirement for compliance with commercial building codes.
No, that's not it. It's a motion to allow John to give notice.
Right. That's what I said.
Sure.
You all know what I mean. Say, all those say aye.
Aye.
Opposed.
Thank you.
Motion carries. Okay, next item is changing the zoning ordinance for coal mining.
We'll just suspend the rules so we can defer.
I wonder, there's nothing on the floor to defer.
Yes, there is. There's
no motion, though.
Don't have to have a motion.
I'd like to discuss this.
For any agenda.
We just don't have action.
Yeah. Why are they talking to each other?
Defer. You can defer. If you do nothing, it's not a list.
It's a private conversation.
Motion to suspend the rules to for the purpose of deferring.
Okay. Motion's been made by Mr. Ginty to suspend the rules regarding deferring items, which has been seconded by Mr. Beckett. Mr. Sapp.
Purpose of deferral.
I'll say as a mover.
Mr. Beckett has the floor. Would you please use your microphone?
Too much, too fast. Just too much. I mean, there's too much information. We're just slowly getting it, and it's just too much. I just don't think this is going to be a worthwhile discussion tonight. I'd like to read some more. We're just getting it, and frankly, I appreciate everybody's opinion, but I'm just not ready to hear it yet.
Mr. McGinty.
Regarding the motion to defer, which is what we need to talk about specifically for everyone, I don't even know what our options are at this point, what our jurisdiction is, what we can vote on, and if we don't have those answers before we enter into discussion about this, why have the discussion if we don't even know what we can do about this? I don't think that's been made clear by anyone to this point, and if that's the case, then I think the motion to defer is obvious.
Mr. Kurtz.
Well, I was hoping tonight we would have at least a discussion on passing out some information or discussing some information of a phone call that myself, Ms. Wysocki, John Hall, and our state's attorney talked to the mining operations and director of the state of Illinois, and then our state's attorney talked with the council of mining operations, and I think we need to at least start a discussion on this, not necessarily voting for an ordinance change, but certainly we need to get out in the light of day on what's taking place in Champaign County concerning coal mining. I've had discussions and we've had meetings in Broadlands. Mr. Langenheim, Ms. Wysocki, and myself attended. We've had officials from Madison County and Montgomery County. I've been in contact with them about what coal mining has done to their counties. And I would like at least to try and discuss this, even though the Sunrise Coal Company doesn't seem to want to have any discussions with us, whether it be with an individual board member, the county board, or the newspapers, who have consistently tried to get responses from them on whether this coal will go to China, whether the coal miners that will be coming in from West Virginia, what the safety health.
Yes. Yeah. We're talking about deferring.
What's that?
We're talking about deferring this item, not
the
item itself.
I don't think we can defer at this point. I think we need to discuss it.
Thank you. Mr. Schrader.
Yeah, I agree with deferring because there's been meetings out there, and really there's been an industry that hadn't been heard from. And there's a lot of information out there. We're just not even touching the tip of the iceberg here. I'm full agreement with deferring this. Thank you.
Mr. Langenheim. Use your microphone.
Yeah, okay. If you insist.
I do.
I agree with Mr. Beckett. There's too much in this, and also there's too little. We need more information. We need to know what other counties who actually have mining going on in the county are doing about this. I did not find the discussion of our relationship to the state regulations easily understandable. I don't know whether anything we might do in the way of local regulations would merely duplicate what's already in place in the state certification. I think there are certain things here we need to be concerned with. For one thing, I don't think the county should be trying to prevent private property owners from selling their mineral rights and selling their coal. There's a hell of a lot of money involved.
The discussion is on deferring.
Okay.
I know it's an occupational hazard for geologists to bend over. All right. Any other discussion on deferring this motion? We're talking a month, right?
Yes.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Point of order.
Can Mr. Hall start to put together some of this information that we've already gotten and try and contact this company, try and contact some other counties like Madison County and Montgomery County as to the coal mining operations there, and so we can get some further information and share it with the entire board by next month?
If that's what the committee wants me to spend time on, I'll be more than happy to spend time doing that.
Mr. Schrader.
We've got to pile on here, John. Why don't you get some information from the industry, too? That would be helpful, if you would, please.
In general? Or
yes, the coal mining industry, yes.
Okay. That is piling on.
Mr. Bridle.
Mr. Schroeder, I'm going to have to ask you if you can clarify. I mean, the coal industry can give you a ton of information. It's been my experience as a professional job, this is my other job. But the coal company will not say anything until they actually apply for the permit, because it's not up to that time when they actually will decide to have a coal mine. If they decide not to have a coal mine, they just won't apply for a permit. And if they have any leases, and most of these leases probably are for a limited time, they'll put those people off about the longest leases and let them go. It's happened in other places. I've talked to landowners who have gotten leases for the coal rights for 2 years, 5 years, or something like that, and then if the company decides not to mine the property, they put it with the checks for those years, and then that's it. But remember, a lease is just strictly gives the company the right to mine the coal. They also get royalties when the coal is actually mined, so it's two different things there. So, but the problem is the coal company is not going to say anything until they actually decide to mine, and when they decide to mine, they apply for a coal permit.
Mr. Gladney.
I know you've heard discussion on this, and here you are discussing it.
You're asked to give Mr. Hall instructions.
He's asking for some help here.
Mr. O'Connor.
Thank you. John, all I need to see is some sort of a short, concise letter of intent from these people, the miners, the coal company, what they think they might be going to do, and when they're going to sneak under the county line with their shaft.
You're not.
Mr. Hall, I'm kind of going to try and win to write that letter for you.
Okay, let's move on here. I'll work with Mr. Hall, and we'll see what information we can identify. Next item, a draft amendment to the nuisance ordinance. Is there a motion to approve this?
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Betts, seconded by Mr. James. Discussion. Mr. James.
John had sent me an email with some draft that he had proposed, and we went through it, and I sent my responses back, and I see he's incorporated some of that. Basically, I think that Tom had brought this subject up, and we've talked about it before when you were chair of that committee, Ms. Wysocki, and I think that it's definitely needed out in some of the rural areas, and I just saw an article, of course, I was contacted about Wilbur Heights, but some of these areas that are out in the outskirts of the towns really need to be looked at and maintained. So I'm in hopes that if everybody reads through it, it's pretty basic. It's more life safety than anything, and I'm hoping that we can all support this.
Any other discussion? All those in favor of approving this draft of a nuisance ordinance, signify by... Yes.
There's two motions that are going to come before us, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is the first one. Yeah, I have no objection to the second one I want to talk about. Okay, thank you.
Okay. All those in favor of the nuisance ordinance as presented by the zoning administrator, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, the next item.
I move adoption of the draft habitability ordinance.
Motion made by Mr. Betts, seconded by Mr. Beckett to approve a habitability ordinance. Discussion? Mr. Nudo.
I see where we're going with this. I think it's very credible that what you're trying to do here, John, but here's what my objection is. We're taking a state law and using it to enforce a lease agreement between a landlord and a tenant. And where I find a problem with this is there's no third-party arbitration. In the example where a tenant finds something wrong, and let's just take that this list here that we have on page 112, 113, etc. Look at 113 as an example, F3. We have insect screens. Now, the state ordinance says very specifically that the tenant can deduct from the landlord's rent after 14 days notification that they repaired a screen with a good, credible vendor and provide, I assume, a bill. Problem is, if a dog's in there, the dog caused a screen problem, and it does say in the state ordinance, if you read it, right at the bottom, it says that there has to be, if it's caused by the tenant, it's not to be paid for. But that landlord's never going to see that rent come back. That landlord, unless you have a third-party arbitrator that said, yes, the screen's damaged, and there was no dog in there to cause the damage, it wasn't the tenant's problem. What I find is a problem with this is there's nothing, there's no way that the landlord has a way to arbitrate this before the rent is already reduced, and the tenant is just not going to have, the landlord's not going to have any recourse in this. You need a third party, and that's code. And having said that, then a lot of this stuff is superfluous, and really, I think page 114 to me is the critical thing. If we're going to enforce it and be a third-party arbitrator in this, 114 is health, life, safety, and I have no problem with that. The previous stuff, maybe I'm being a little too judgmental on this. There may be other things in here on the previous two pages that are, recourse for a third party to say that the landlord didn't pay it, the tenant can reduce the rent. But to stay out of this, you're very clear on this, and I understand why. The county's going to have nothing to do with this. It's between the landlord and the tenant. It's just going to play havoc. The landlord just has no recourse except for going to court, and that fiddly amounts will be, it'll just, it's just not worth it. I think we need some third party to arbitrate that before rent's reduced.
Mr. Betts.
I have worked in this field for 26 years. The city of Urbana has had repair and deduct for longer than 26 years. Many states have repair and deduct. In fact, we have repair and deduct in Illinois even to some degree without this ordinance under case law, Jack Spring versus Little and Glasso versus Trinkle, which came right out of this county, went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said indeed you could do it even in the absence of such an ordinance. Actually, this ordinance in many respects actually limits tenants' rights rather than expands them, because under Glasso versus Trinkle you could get every drop of the damages. I can tell you that in 26 years of litigating landlord-tenant issues, repair and deduct in the city of Urbana has been used through my office, and in my office would be probably the most likely the office in Land of Lincoln, less than 20 times. It is a rare occurrence to do repair and deduct, because you have to do a bonded repair person. Quite frankly, $500 is such a low amount that usually it is not even worth the tenant going out and repairing it. What this law really does is it encourages the landlord to make the repairs rather than face the deduction. What I usually do is say, dear landlord, it's come to my attention that X, Y, and Z is wrong. Let's see if we can't get this repaired. And I'll give them a copy of the Urbana Ordinance. The repair takes place. That is what is envisioned in this self-help remedy that the state of Illinois adopted. We're just giving it some definition. If you recall, when we were dealing with the case and people were complaining and very upset about the heat being off in the campus, Kempo property, near Rantoul, we didn't have the tools to do anything. This is one of the tools. Everyone was very concerned back then. This is the way you deal with it. It's not totally effective because the limitations are rather overwhelming on this. In terms of a third party, there is always a third party, and that is the court. If it's more than $500 and it's a repair issue, the tenant's probably going to have to sue in court for a breach of habitability using both this ordinance and Jack Spring versus Little and Glasso versus Trinkle, and can do that. This is a very, very small amount of money in terms of actually being able to make repairs. If you're talking about plumbing, if you can get a plumber to do plumbing for $500, the service cost is going to cost you at least $90 just to show up. And that's going to be true of heating. That's going to be true of a number of these life safety issues. So it's going to affect relatively few people. I think what it's going to do is encourage some of the landlords who are not making repairs, not keeping the property. There's a tool there to encourage it. 99.9% of all landlords in Champaign-Urbana and in Savoy and in rural areas value their property. They don't want to see it decline. They don't want to see it harmed. They don't want tenants to harm it. They don't want tenants making those repairs on their own because they don't do it right. This is a way of encouraging the 1% that are really not doing the job to start doing the job.
Mr. James.
Well, when I was looking at all this with Tom and John, again, I just want to go back to page 112, number 3 there sort of sums it up, that if you have a good lease and you have rules that go with that lease, like we do in our lease, we tell them that they must call in the work order and there's certain procedures they have to follow. I agree that I was worried about some of this when I reread it, and then I sent some notes to John on it. But basically, when I worked for HUD and I was in the Section 8 program, some of the same things that are in here were the bare minimums that we were required to look at and enforce. And I used to laugh at it because, like on the screens, their deal was, well, if there was no screen frame in the window, you didn't have to worry about a screen. And I thought, well, how idiotic is that? At least here it's telling you if it's an operable window, it should be there. And I agree. There's a lot of stories we can all tell, but I think that this county, especially, and Tom said near Rantoul, I want to correct him, it's near Thomasboro.
My namesake town.
But I strongly think it's time we look at this, and like I said, it's more to protect some of those folks that we've heard the horror stories from, and I don't think, in my mind, that there's going to be a lot of claims and complaints. And if I understand the process right, Tom, you can jump in here. If a tenant does do anything to a landlord, my understanding is under the state law it has to be done by a certified letter and mail. So we're covered in a lot of instances, and it's time that landlords respond properly and do what's expected of them, just like we expect of the tenants. And I've been a landlord many years too. Alan, you and I have talked, and you've heard my stories. That's how my hair turned gray. But I do believe in this. I hope we pass it.
Mr. Nudo.
One more quick response. I've been for this all along, and I agree that this is needed, but I just kind of feel that we should focus on life safety, real life safety on this, and not get into the minutia. And in that case, then I think county code should take a look at it and be an arbitrator in it
If a furnace is not working, Tom, that's his right. $500 is not going to cover it. But you need some enforcement in order for them to do this. And I, you know, let's not major in minors. I think that there's some things in here that we should focus on, have code look at it as the arbitrator for the landlord, and they can do the deduct if that's the case. I would like to proceed in that manner rather than something like this, which is just all-encompassing. I just foresee that we could tighten this up if we really work at it.
Mr. James?
You know, with what Al's saying, due to our lack of staffing at this time, I mean, we can always add to something. But if we could tighten it up on the major issues such as the heating and the air conditioning and the plumbing and the electrical, some of those other little items, as I'm going to call them, or fluff, as I always use, I think we can bring that in later. And if a tenant so desires, like Tom just explained to us, that they can go the other way because it is a state law, and if they want to go through all the paperwork for a $5 screen, so be it. But I think the major issues really are the things that we've heard the most about and we should be looking at. So if we can tighten that up just so your department or whoever it is that's going to be out there, the sheriff department or whoever, Steve Beckett's law firm, that we can do what we need to do.
Mr. Beckett?
Well, I think that what we ought to do is approve this tonight so that it goes to full board, and then I've been listening to the discussion. Seems to me that if Mr. Nudo or others who are interested in the so-called minutia want to have an amended proposal at the full board, that would give us an alternative to look at, so that I like to see things in writing so that I can understand exactly what the change that they propose has made. But I would see no reason why we can't approve it so that the issue stays alive, go to the full board, and have something concrete for us to look at as an alternative.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the habitability ordinance signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. I just want to clarify, the intention of this committee is to perhaps maybe do some tweaking and amending over the next week and a half or so.
Some members.
Yeah. And I really do appreciate the input that John has received from Mr. James, Mr. Nudo, Mr. Beckett, or Mr. Betts. On working on this, I think this is it's a good area for some cooperation, and particularly because those of you who represent rural areas had an opportunity to weigh in on these issues that are obviously closer to you than perhaps it is to us city folks.
So if I could just clarify something with the committee, I will prepare a resolution, or actually an ordinance, based on what you have before you. That will be in the mailing, and anyone who contacts me with recommended changes will have an alternative at the meeting for the board to consider at the meeting. Is that
so?
We have put a packet also. Okay.
Part of the, I think to do it properly, I would say that you have the ordinance based on what we passed tonight available. That will have to come to the floor. We immediately the revised one could be offered as a substitute motion.
Okay, but you do want both of them in the packet.
Yes, we're
going to
consider it.
Hold on. I would probably recommend that we put the ordinance based on what was done tonight with the agenda packet and provide any substitute separately from the packet that could be moved as an amendment on the night of the meeting.
But make
it go out with the packet so everyone has time to review it.
Correct.
Right.
Okay. Okay, monthly reports. You have in front of you the monthly reports for June and July of 2010. Is there a motion to place them on file? Motion by Mr. Langenheim, seconded by Mr. Rosales. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Other business?
Yes, I am going to deal with that in a minute. There are two items under the chair's report. One is, I want to bring your attention to the flyer at your desk that has to do with the county residential electronic recycling effort. This is scheduled for this Saturday up at the News Gazette Distribution Center. If you have electronic items that you're dying to get rid of, here's a good option, an opportunity to do that. The other is, I did want to bring your attention to what was item B on the agenda that had to do with the Kaskaskia Basin Water Supply Study. If you recall, 3 years ago now, Champaign County was part of a similar study that encompassed 12 counties between Vermilion and Adams County to deal with the Mahomet Aquifer primarily, but also the issue of water in general and future supplies and future uses of it. The committee that was put together for that process is pretty much the same committee formation that this Kaskaskia Basin supply is advocating. They have added the Farm Bureaus as stakeholders in this, which they did not do in the previous one. And I believe navigation and recreation are also included. But they are asking for people and to participate. The Kaskaskia does take in a bit of Champaign County. So if you're interested in doing this, please submit the appropriate documentation and we'll see what happens. Okay. So at this point, all of the items we've dealt with are on the consent agenda.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to clarify that if those are on the consent agenda or not, it would just be F and G. That's all that's going to the
right.
Board.
The nuisance ordinance was unanimous.
G is not on the consent agenda.
G is not. Okay. Okay. And that's it.
There's one more facilities item.
Yes. I do want to get the committee to approve the closed session minutes that have been distributed.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Beckett, seconded by Mr. Kurtz. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. You want to come and do that one?
Can I do it from here? Anybody care if I do it from here? I'll entertain a motion that we enter into closed session pursuant to 5 ILCS 122C6 to discuss the setting of a price for sale or lease of property owned by Champaign County. I further move that the following individuals remain present, county administrator and the recording secretary. Will somebody move?
So
moved by Beth, second by James. Discussion?
No.
Need a roll call.
Anderson.
Yes.
Beckett.
Yes.
Benzel.
Yes.
Betts.
Yes.
Court.
Yes.
Dennis.
Yes.
Gladney.
Yes.
James.
Yes.
Jay.
Yes.
Jones. Kurtz.
Yes.
Langenheim.
Yes.
McGinty.
Yes.
Michaels. Nudo. O'Connor.
Yes.
Rosales.
Yes.
Sapp.
Yes.
Trader. Weibel.
Yes.
Wysocki.
Yes. Okay. To adjourn.
Let them know that we're in public session.
How many more meetings, Steve?
Pardon?
11. But I'm not counting.
No, the crowd's in. Let's check in.
Everybody wants to come back.
Okay. We are back in open session. Is there a motion to adjourn? Motion by Mr. Kurtz, seconded by Mr. James. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.